I sit here in the sunlight and wait. I am not totally certain what I am waiting for. I can feel a growing warmth on my back as the morning sunlight is reflected from the white stone of Ceres' tomb. Ceres' tomb. There are no clouds in the sky. I raise my head and squint skyward as if I might be able to see the L.A. and the newly finished Farcaster array through the glare of atmosphere. I cannot. Part of me knows that they have not risen yet. Part of me knows to the second, the time remaining before ship and Farcaster complete their transit to the zenith. Part of me does not want to think about it. Ciri, am I doing the right thing? There is the sudden sound of pennants stirring on their staffs as the wind comes up. I sense, rather than see, the restlessness of the waiting crowd. For the first time since my planetfall for this, our sixth reunion, I am filled with sorrow. No, not sorrow, not yet, but a sharp-toothed sadness which soon will open into grief. For years I have carried on silent conversations with Ciri, framing questions to myself for future discussion with her, and it suddenly strikes me with cold clarity that we will never again sit together and talk. An emptiness begins to grow inside me. Should I let it happen, Ciri? There is no response, except for the growing murmurs of the crowd. In a few minutes they will send Danel, my younger and surviving son, or his daughter Lyra and her brother up the hill to urge me on. I toss away the sprig of willow grass I've been chewing on. There is a hint of shadow on the horizon. It could be a cloud. Or it could be the first of the isles, driven by instinct and the spring northerlies to migrate back to the great band of the equatorial shallows from whence they came. It does not matter. Ciri, am I doing the right thing? There is no answer, and the time grows shorter. Sometimes Ciri seemed so ignorant it made me sick. She knew nothing of my life away from her. She would ask questions, but I sometimes wondered if she was interested in the answers. I spent many hours explaining the beautiful physics behind our spin ships, but she never did seem to understand. Once, after I had taken great care to detail the differences between their ancient siege ship and the Los Angeles, Ciri astounded me by asking, "But why did it take my ancestors 80 years of ship time to reach Maui Covenant, when you can make the trip in 130 days? She had understood nothing. Ciri's sense of history was, at best, pitiful. She viewed the hegemony and the world web the way a child would view the fantasy world of a pleasant but rather silly myth. There was an indifference there that almost drove me mad at times. Ciri knew all about the early days of the Hegira, at least insofar as they pertained to the Maui Covenant and the colonists, and she occasionally would come up with delightful bits of archaic trivia or phraseology, but she knew nothing of post-Hegira realities. Names like Garden and the Ousters, Renaissance and Lussis meant little to her. I could mention Salmud Brevi or General Horace Glennon Height, and she would have no associations or reactions at all. None. The last time I saw Ciri, she was 70 standard years old. She was 70 years old, and still she had never traveled off-world, used a fat line, tasted any alcoholic drink except wine, interfaced with an empathy surgeon, stepped through a Farcaster door, smoked a cannabis stick, received gene tailoring, plugged into a stim sim, received any formal schooling, taken any RNA medication, heard of Zen Gnostics or the Shrike Church, or flown any vehicle except an ancient Vicken skimmer belonging to her family. Ciri had never made love to anyone except me, or so she said, and so I believed. It was during our first reunion, that time on the archipelago, when Ciri took me to talk with the dolphins. We had risen to watch the dawn. The highest levels of the treehouse were a perfect place from which to watch the eastern sky pale and fade to morning. Ripples of high cirrus turned to rose, and then The sea itself grew molten as the sun floated above the flat horizon. "Let's go swimming," said Ciri. The rich horizontal light bathed her skin and threw her shadow 4 meters across the boards of the platform. "I'm too tired," I said. "Later." We had lain awake most of the night, talking, making love, talking and making love again. In the glare of morning, I felt empty and vaguely nauseated. I sensed the slight movement of the aisle under me as a tinge of vertigo, a drunkard's disconnection from gravity. "No, let's go now," said Ciri, and grasped my hand to pull me along. I was irritated, but did not argue. Ciri was 26, 7 years older than I during that first reunion. But her impulsive behavior often reminded me of the teenaged Ciri I had carried away from the festival only 10 of my months earlier. Her deep, unself-conscious laugh was the same. Her green eyes cut as sharply when she was impatient. The long mane of auburn hair had not changed. But her body had ripened, filled out with a promise which had been only hinted at before. Her breasts were still high and full, almost girlish, bordered above by freckles that gave way to a whiteness so translucent that a gentle blue tracery of veins could be seen. But they were different, somehow. She was different. "Are you going to join me or just sit there staring?" asked Ciri. She had slipped off her caftan as we came out onto the lowest deck. Our small ship was still tied to the dock. Above us, the island's tree sails were beginning to open to the morning breeze. For the past several days, Ciri had insisted on wearing swim strips when we went into the water. She wore none now. Her nipples rose in the cool air. "Won't we be left behind?" I asked, squinting up at the flapping tree sails. On previous days we had waited for the doldrums in the middle of the day, when the isle was still in the water, the sea a glazed mirror. Now the jib vines were beginning to pull taut as the thick leaves filled with wind. "Don't be silly," said Ciri. "We could always catch a keel root and follow it back, that or a feeding tendril. Come on." She tossed an osmosis mask at me and donned her own. The transparent film made her face look slick with oil. From the pocket of her caftan she lifted a thick medallion and set it in place around her neck. The metal looked dark and ominous against her skin. "What's that?" I asked. Ciri did not lift the osmosis mask to answer. She set the comm threads in place against her neck and handed me the hearplugs. Her voice was tinny. "Translation disc," she said. "Thought you knew all about gadgets, Marin. Last one in's a sea slug." She held the disc in place between her breasts with one hand and stepped off the aisle. I could see the pale globes of her buttocks as she pirouetted and kicked for depth. In seconds, she was only a white blur deep in the water. I slipped my own mask on, pressed the comm threads tight, and stepped into the sea. The bottom of the aisle was a dark stain on a ceiling of crystalline light. I was wary of the thick feeding tendrils, even though Ciri had amply demonstrated that they were interested in devouring nothing larger than the tiny zooplankton that even now caught the sunlight like dust in an abandoned ballroom. Keel roots descended like gnarled stalactites for hundreds of meters into the purple depths. The aisle was moving. I could see the faint fibrillation of the tendrils as they trailed along. A wake caught the light 10 meters above me. For a second I was choking, the gel of the mask smothering me as surely as the surrounding water would, and then I relaxed, and the air flowed freely into my lungs. "Deeper, Marin," came Ciri's voice. I blinked, a slow-motion blink as the mask readjusted itself over my eyes, and caught sight of Ciri 20 meters lower, grasping a keel root and trailing effortlessly above the colder, deeper currents where the light did not reach. I thought of the thousands of meters of water under me, of the things which might lurk there, unknown, unsought out by the human colonists. I thought of the dark and the depths, and my scrotum tightened involuntarily. "Come on down," Siri's voice was an insect buzz in my ears. I rotated and kicked. The buoyancy here was not so great as in old Earth's seas, but it still took energy to dive so deep. The mask compensated for depth and nitrogen, but I could feel the pressure against my skin and ears. Finally, I quit kicking, grabbed a keel root, and roughly hauled myself down to Siri's level. We floated side by side in the dim light. Siri was a spectral figure here, her long hair swirling in a wine-dark nimbus, the pale strips of her body glowing in the blue-green light. The surface seemed impossibly distant. The widening V of the wake and the drift of the scores of tendrils showed that the isle was moving more quickly now, moving mindlessly to other feeding grounds, distant waters. "Where are the—" I began to sub-vocalize. "Shh," said Siri. She fiddled with the medallion. I could hear them then, the shrieks and trills and whistles and cat purrs and echoing cries. The depths were suddenly filled with strange music. "Jesus," I said, and because Siri had tuned our comm threads to the translator, the word was broadcast as a senseless whistle and toot. "Hello," she called, and the translated greeting echoed from the transmitter, a high-speed bird's call sliding into the ultrasonic. "Hello," she called again. Minutes passed before the dolphins came to investigate. They rolled past us, surprisingly large, alarmingly large, their skin looking slick and muscled in the uncertain light. A large one swam within a meter of us, turning at the last moment so that the white of his belly curved past us like a wall. I could see the dark eye rotate to follow me as he passed. One stroke of his wide fluke kicked up a turbulence strong enough to convince me of the animal's power. "Hello," called Siri, but the swift form faded into distant haze, and there was a sudden silence. Siri clicked off the translator. "Do you want to talk to them?" she asked. "Sure." I was dubious. More than 3 centuries of effort had not raised much of a dialogue between man and sea mammal. Mike had once told me that the thought structures of old Earth's 2 groups of orphans were too different, the reference too few. One pre-Hegira expert had written that speaking to a dolphin or porpoise was about as rewarding as speaking to a 1-year-old human infant. Both sides usually enjoyed the exchange, and there was a simulacrum of conversation, but neither party would come away the more knowledgeable. Siri switched the translator disc back on. "Hello?" I said. There was a final minute of silence, and then our earphones were buzzing while the sea echoed shrill ululations.
"Distance, no fluke. Hello, tone. Current pulse. Circle me. Funny."
"What the hell?" I asked Siri, and the translator trilled out my question. Siri was grinning under her osmosis mask. I tried again. "Hello. Greetings from, the surface. How are you?" The large male, I assumed it to be a male, curved in toward us like a torpedo. He arch-kicked his way through the water 10 times faster than I could have swum, even if I had remembered to don flippers that morning. For a second I thought he was going to ram us, and I raised my knees and clung tightly to the keel root. Then he was past us, climbing for air, while Siri and I reeled from his turbulent wake and the high tones of his shout.
"No fluke! No feed! No swim! No play! No fun!"
Siri switched off the translator and floated closer. She lightly grasped my shoulders while I held on to the keel root with my right hand. Our legs touched as we drifted through the warm water. A school of tiny crimson warrior fish flickered above us, while the dark shapes of the dolphins circled farther out. "Had enough?" she asked. Her hand was flat on my chest. "One more try," I said. Siri nodded and twisted the disc to life. The current pushed us together again. She slid her arm around me. "Why do you herd the islands?" I asked the bottlenosed shapes circling in the dappled light. How does it benefit you to stay with the Isles?
Sounding now. Old songs. Deep water. No great voices. No shark. Old songs. New songs.
Ciri's body lay along the length of me now. Her left arm tightened around me. Great voices were the whales, she whispered. Her hair fanned out in streamers. Her right hand moved down and seemed surprised at what it found. Do you miss the great voices? I asked the shadows. There was no response. Ciri slid her legs around my hips. The surface was a churning bowl of light 40 meters above us. What do you miss most of old Earth's oceans? I asked. With my left arm, I pulled Ciri closer, slid my hand down along the curve of her back to where her buttocks rose to meet my palm, held her tight. To the circling dolphins, we must have appeared a single creature. Ciri lifted herself against me, and we became a single creature. The translator disc had twisted around, so it trailed over Ciri's shoulder. I reached to shut it off, but paused as the answer to my question buzzed urgently in our ears.
Miss Shark! Miss Shark! Miss Shark! Miss Shark! 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 Shark!
I turned off the disc and shook my head. I did not understand. There was so much I did not understand. I closed my eyes as Ciri and I moved gently to the rhythms of the current and ourselves, while the dolphins swam nearby and the cadence of their calls took on the sad, slow trilling of an old lament.